Welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I am Phil Taylor, your host, and we're going to be talking to Peter McFarlane in just about 15 minutes, because his book, Family Ties, seems very appropriate for Remembrance Day, because Canada has a problem with its memory. We have a little taste of music that sort of captures the appropriate spirit, I guess, of the day, Remembrance. We'll play it now. It's Reuben James.
Fighting men, both of honor and of fame.
She flew the stars and stripes of the land of the free,
but tonight she's in her grave at the bottom of the sea.
Oh, tell me, what were the names? Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend of good Reuben James?
Won't you tell me, what were their names?
Tell me, what were their names? Did you have a friend of good Reuben?
So it's Woody Guthrie's song, it's associated to World War II. The U.S. wasn't actually in the war at the time. It was 2 months before they entered the war that a U-boat sank the Reuben James. Certainly contributed towards bringing the U.S. into the war. I think they found the names. Somebody has listed what the names. But at any rate, this is, of course, a time when everybody says honor the soldiers, which is okay, which is good, but they're supposed to remember the soldiers of what war. These wars start to pile up and people forget, well, wait a minute, they were killed where? Who is the enemy? Which is, again, why we want to talk to Peter McFarlane. He's trying to help us with our memory. Canada has a problem on that front. Before we do get to Peter, I just want to mention a couple of things. The Qatar story, you probably heard it from Democracy Now! Just moments ago. They're reporting Qatar is doing a kind of a double whammy. They are pulling out of the so-called peace talks, which is probably neither here nor there in a sense. And there also is talk that they're going to expel the representatives of Hamas. And using ordinary speech, I would tell you that it seems to be part of what I would call a double cross. But, you know, when things get tight, that's when double crosses happen. We've been saying on the Taylor Report that the whole business about peace talks is phony, because the entire process is owned, O-W-N-E-D, owned by the U.S. Egypt, Qatar, and the United States are chummy-chums. And so when you say, well, they're going to mediate, they're not going to mediate anything. They're going to be there to facilitate a result. And we want to remind everybody, and this is part of the Armistice Day, Remembrance Day, what it's all about. World War II created an entity called the United Nations. And the Americans have been desperately leading a force trying to destroy international cooperation in the United Nations, practically from the day it first drew breath, because it's not a concept they like, because they define themselves as an exceptional country and the leader of the free world, and all the rest of the world they intend to wage war with. And now they're getting, as history caught up with them, pushback from countries that really are not easy to bully. So this process is a part of this game the Americans have been playing in the Middle East for a long, long time. Last week on the show, we talked to Professor Atif Kaborsi, and we went over this, that the Eastern Mediterranean in the area called the Levant was something the Americans and the British and the French won in the First World War. It was a colonial victory. Their empires determined that they would control that portion of the region that called the Levant, and they do control it. And they controlled it before Israel came into existence. And were Israel to disappear, they would still control it. Or at least that would be their goal. And so it is, and if, by the way, if you object to them and their process, I mean, they will go to war with you over that. They went to a lot of trouble to steal it, and they want it, and they want to keep it. So we've been talking about this for a long time, that that this phenomenon, that was, you know, the talks, was basically a trap of a sort, and that really the only hope of those people in that region who wish to be independent is if they, of course, truly fight for their independence and not try to negotiate it through the NATO gang, because the NATO gang is never going to give them independence. The only country in the region that is actually independent is Syria. Everybody else has been forced to knuckle under. So anyway, we'll follow that more closely. Stay with it. On the matter of the presidential election, I don't think anybody should be surprised. You could work off this little kerfuffle we're hearing about between Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden and look at it closely and see what is actually being said. Pelosi says that Biden should have left earlier and that probably may have cost them. I think now she's saying there should have been a convention, which is, by the way, she had the power to make that happen if she wanted to. But if you watch, go back and look at the moments, and you will find that Joe Biden said, I'm going to stay in the race. I'm the guy. I can beat this guy, blah, blah. Even though everybody could see there was a very serious problem for him. And he was, they called him stubborn. He was stubborn until they said the big money people called him up. And what they said to him was, there's not going to be any money. We're not going to give you money if you stay in the race. So it was money told him to leave. It wasn't Nancy and the Democrats. And it was money said, we're not putting any money on you. And it takes us back to a very important point about American, modern American politics. It has become our old friend Ramsey Clark called a plutocracy. I watched one of the so-called geniuses of the Democratic Party, James Carville, who, by the way, is as stupid and arrogant and obscene as Donald Trump. When he talks, he's just frankly disgusting. But at any rate, he's considered a party genius. And he said, we're going to win. And his reason was that they had more money. And that people should understand. The Democrats actually, we all know about Adelson and the $100 million, and some of the other billionaires gave $100 million. Well, actually, there was more money given to the Democrats. And so he said, we have more money, therefore, that's one reason. And then reason number two was my favorite. He said, Harris has better surrogates. And by that he meant, you know, when you run, people who are well known who support you are your surrogates. And they go, for example, if they're well known in Colorado, the surrogate goes to Colorado and says, my fellow Coloradians, this is our candidate and get behind her, et cetera. So the surrogates that he was speaking of, one of them was Obama. So Obama went in front of a largely black male audience. And he put on a typical Obama speech where he told them that their problem was that they were afraid of a black woman leader. And that claim sank like a rock. So that was the big help from Obama. And then Clinton, watch it, by the way, there's a program called Useful Idiots, Aaron Maté, I forget the woman's name, but they're really brilliant people. They analyzed the Clinton speech. He went to Michigan. He was speaking to a largely Arab-American audience. And he told them that the problem, he's a classic patronizing language. He says, I know you're concerned at the terrible loss of life, and I sympathize with you, and I understand, and I can sympathize with your position. However, I have to tell you that Hamas is responsible for what happened there. And I get it. You're upset. I get it. Well, every syllable cost several thousand votes. He was typical of American former presidents who still think they're president or somehow think that they're movie stars. And he thought he would wag his finger at Arab Americans. And Obama thought he'd wag his finger at black men in America. And this is these are age-old problems. But they just, so Mr. Carville, those surrogates were negatives. They were not positives. Both Obama and Clinton are spent forces. They're done. And that posture is typified what everybody calls elitist thinking in the Democratic Party. And no, you're never going to escape. If these families control the party, all they're concerned about is their control. They're not worried about the country at all. Their family group or regional group has to dominate. And just as a little history lesson, I'll tell you, I got this revelation about money in American politics. I was watching, years ago, I was watching Richard Nixon, famous villain in American life, although they're turning, I think they'll build a statue to him pretty soon. But he had pretty much ruined his political career and thought he was never going to run again. So he began to talk in a different kind of language when he was interviewed. So a man named Barry Goldwater was running for president. And people said, boy, that's a long shot. I mean, Goldwater's an Arizona guy and Republican, and he's in favor of war. Nobody else was in favor of war. So they asked Nixon, well, what do you think are his chances? And Nixon said, well, that depends on the Eastern money. And I sat up at that moment and thought, well, thank you very much. Why don't we hear more discussion like that? He said, it depends on the Eastern money. If they want this guy, he's got a shot. But if they don't, he doesn't. So, well, we're going to bail out here at this point, and we're going to take a little musical break. This is a Taylor Report at the CIUT. I want to remind you, by the way, next week we're going to be asking you, urging you to support this wonderful station, CIUT, and you can start doing it now, CIUT.fm, and donate to the Taylor Report. So we're going to take a little break and listen to the good Reuben, and we'll be back with Peter McFarlane.